D-Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. We are efforting Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. Once we get a hold of Teron, we will bring him on, and Teron Davenport is presented by Bart Durham Injury Law. So as we wait for Teron, let's go back to your reaction on your reviews of Cam Ward's overall preseason performance. 615-737-1025. Sean says, I think Cam shows the mental toughness you need to be a successful quarterback. Dustin in Hopkinsville said there were many dropped balls in preseason. I think he's right there at 62% completion if receivers did what they are supposed to do and catch the ball. Well, guess what, Dustin? There is a stat for that. According to Pro Football Focus, adjusted completion percentage, the percentage of aimed passes thrown on target, completions plus drops divided by aimed. That's an interesting math problem.
Divided by aim.
So his... Let's see here. I just had it.
I didn't have an aim in the
exactly,
math class.
Me
yes. What's the symbol for aim? No.
So Cam Ward had a 52.6 completion percentage, an actual completion percentage of 52.6. His adjusted completion percentage was 61.1%. So
that's more in the neighborhood of what you want, yeah, especially exactly. We know he threw the ball down the field.
Mm-hmm.
Like if the
didn't
aim,
he lead all quarterbacks in yardage per pass?
Average depth of target?
Yeah,
I can find that out for
yeah,
you.
For rookies, at least.
I can find
that out
for you.
Because I think the point is this. If we're really nitpicking on completion percentage in three games and seven drives,
yeah.
Okay? But if a coach said, I want to lead the league in completion percentage in the three preseason games, seven. He could have.
Oh, you can
just
do that.
Throw swing passes every play, and you could be 10 for 11, but that's not what you want to do in preseason.
Mm-hmm. No, you don't. And that's why I said that, you know, the numbers don't necessarily tell, at least not for me, it doesn't necessarily tell whether, you know, Cam is developing or not. If you just watch the games and know what's going on from aerial view, then you'll see he was a little bit better than what the stats said.
Let's welcome in Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter, and he is presented by Bart Durham Injury Law. TD, let's start with this. We're talking about Cam Ward, so we'll ask you that same question. How would you assess Cam Ward's overall performance in the preseason? And in which specific areas did you see him improve the most from the start of training camp to now?
Yeah, I would say it was a solid performance. It wasn't outstanding and it wasn't terrible. So he's right there in the middle, and it's what you expect from a rookie quarterback. I think the area he got better, just establishing a rhythm. And I talked to him a lot throughout camp just about the timing and making sure he's at the top of the drop, the ball's getting out and those types of things. And he said the timing was really what's going to, you know, help him make the transition. And I think you look at that, like once things start to struggle a little bit at times, they would go right to like a quick passing type of scheme to get him in a rhythm. So I think like that is something that Brian Callahan and Cam Ward improved upon, just being able to find a way to get him comfortable and in a groove.
Teron, I want you to pick a winner and loser of the Titans preseason. And it can be a specific player, or it can be an entire position group. So if you had to pick a quote-unquote winner and quote-unquote loser of the Titans preseason, who would it be?
It's hard not to pick Cedric Gray. Like, I want to mention Bryce Oliver, but I think you look at Cedric Gray and what he did the last 2 weeks of preseason, I think has been an outstanding job. And it's just pretty cool to see when that thing just clicks and all of a sudden the guy is just playing the position naturally and playing without thinking and just flowing. And as he said, it started to slow down, not literally, but just mentally things slowed down and he's processing, boom, boom, doing what he needs to do. So he's had a pretty solid camp, you know, more tackles than anyone else in camp. So I would probably go him. As far as losers concerned, wow, that's I'd probably say, you know, I've been high on him. I didn't think that he would make the roster, but I thought that he's a guy that would stand out, and that's Xavier Restrepo. And I hate to call him a loser, so I'm not going to necessarily do that. But I'm going to say camp was least kind to him just because of the upside and promise that, you know, came with being the all-time leading receiver in Miami, the hot start that he had in OTAs and minicamp, and then, you know, training camp came, and the ball just didn't seem to find him a lot. And obviously not being on the field with Cam, that obviously is going to have a good impact on it. But, yeah, I would say Restrepo is the one that camp was least kind to.
Now, TD, let's go back to Cedric Gray, because we did talk about him briefly earlier in the show. And do you think he will benefit the most from having Tavondre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons in the middle? Because to me, the only flaw in his game, or one of the flaws, and he can't do anything about it, he's just not big. And to take on those big offensive linemen, that's where you need those two hefty guys in the middle to occupy some space, and then he can do what he does best and hit the hole. He did that this past weekend. He made a tackle in the backfield, or go sideline to sideline. I've seen many years Ray Lewis do it, and he was able to do it. Why? Because he had Saragusa and those big hounds in the middle, and they were holding up players. And Ray did what he did best. So can Cedric Gray benefit the most from those two, and how they want to play that type of defense?
Yeah, I think he and Cody Barton could benefit, and James Williams when he's in there, to be honest with you. And you're 100% right, man. You got those hogs up front, and they're occupying linemen and keeping them from getting to the second level, and you have to deal with them. It's a huge benefit. And to your point about, like, I think he's decent size, but there's just something to those guys, man. And the one that he wore the same number, 51, and that's that David Long, man. I used to love the way he'll just kind of weave through. Look like you in the black Porsche, man, weaving through traffic and getting where they got to go. You know, he will weave around the offensive linemen, and they couldn't get a hand on him. So that's something that Cedric Gray is going to have to learn to do. And he's not going to have to do it as much, though, because, like you say, you got those guys up front. They just need to get T-Sweat back on the field and get him conditioned and able to go to get back to the snap count that he was last year.
Now, we also mentioned about some things that we were concerned about with Cam Ward. And my concern wasn't necessarily Cam Ward. It's those that are tasked to develop him. Are they going to have patience? And I said to the guys, it's not that I don't think Callahan, because if this thing doesn't start off well, the pressure may come from up top, which it filters down. And if Callahan feels pressures, then he may try to expedite the process with the quarterback. And if that happens, I think that's never good for a young quarterback. So my only concern is that if the Titans start off and not win at least two in their first five, and it may happen, that those above Callahan will not be patient and he will feel it, then that will be, you know, sort of felt by the quarterback as well.
Yeah, well, you know, I like to eat, so I tend to associate things with food a little more. And to me, like, you can't put a crock pot meal in a microwave, right? Mm-hmm. And just the same, you can't put a microwave meal in a crock pot. So in this case, that whole organization, the franchise period, is something that is going to take a process to get where they want to be. They're just not in the position to just suddenly heat up and do what the Texans did a couple years ago. So to me, the patience, that is the buzzword, patience and process. So those and stability, those are the things. And shout out to Cam himself for lobbying for that stability. Hey, it hasn't been around here in a while, but I want to establish that. I want to be the reason why Callahan is a top head coach in the league. I want to be with Bo Hardigree, Nick Holtz, and Callahan for years to come. I think he did a good job of kind of pushing that message, and it's going to be necessary. But you're right, when you have the way things have gone the last 3 years, I mean, a GM head coach, GM being fired, you always are going to question whether or not there is patience. And I think it really comes down to Amy Adams Strunk just kind of taking a step back, you know, not working in her emotions and allowing the football guys to do what they do. But those football guys have to have patience. And the good thing from that perspective is their roots are built into processes that took time, and they've seen the results, right, in Green Bay with Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi when he was a part of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Terod Davenport is with us, talking with TD here. So, TD, what's your best guess at what the running back position looks like beyond Tony Pollard? If you had to guess right now, with the waiver wire looming and the guys you saw behind Tajay Spears?
Yeah, well, Spears and his high ankle sprain, that's a tough situation. So we'll see. I mean, that's probably going to kind of stick with him for, I would say, the season, you know, because that's an injury that just
so do you
never
think,
gets right.
To start with that, do you think we might see him on the IR with the hope to return, but just give him a little more time?
There's a possibility, right? And, I mean, you look at that, and it goes back to what you said about the patience, right? Because Tajay Spears was a big part of this offense. Are they going to be able to put him on IR, have him not in there, and still be able to function? Because they like to create matchups with the running back on linebacker in the passing game, and Tajay Spears is their best option there. So I think there's a chance that he ends up there. As far as how the room will look behind him, you know, I think they keep four, right? I think they keep four running backs, three tight ends. And you look at the four running backs, it's Natron Means, a.k.a. Julius Chestnut. And
coming off the hurdle where he just completely – Jason McCourty had a funny line. I don't know if you went back and watched the broadcast on CBS, but Jason McCourty had a – he goes, that is not a good feeling when you hear – just you feel the whiff going over time. You don't even touch the guy when he jumps over you?
Yeah, just jumps. Bryce Oliver tried to do it too, so I guess it was a common theme. But, yeah, I mean, you got him and you got Kalel Mullins who – you know, he had to go out the last game. He had a lower leg injury, I think a right lower leg. We'll get more clarity on that soon. But I think those four guys make it. And you got to remember, Mullins being a former linebacker, he brings you that special teams value. So he has a nice ticket onto the roster.
So here's what I want to say. This was something that I was listening to, you know, on a podcast that The Athletic put together. And it could have been anywhere, right? But it's a good – it's a good question for you, TD, from where you sit. I think we would all agree that the pass rush for Denard Wilson's defense, it's got to be more than the sum of the parts. You don't look on paper and say, man, they're going to get this guy and this guy. They're going to get their sacks, right? It's got to be collectively. So how do you feel about that whole thing? Can they get what they want collectively from the pass rush, from what you're seeing?
I don't think it's going to be high sack numbers. They got to find a way to get home and actually take the quarterback down, because so many times you see them getting pressures but not sacks. And obviously you want to do more than sack. You want to impact the quarterback, cause turnovers, et cetera. So I've seen flashes of how things could work. Like you had the Cedric Gray sack, you know, when he ran through the running back's mustache. You got those types of things, but the quarterback had to step up in the pocket because that outside pressure was there. So as long as they could make sure that they're disciplined and not running too deep and giving the escape lane, because that's what happened last year. They were too deep, quarterback had escape lane, and you notice he would step up and then shoot out to one of those lanes and pick up yards. So I think that's the main thing, and it seems like that's been a focus just from the start and talking to the guys. It's all been coordinated pass rush. And if they could get that, I think they'll be all right. But it's really going to come down to everybody being disciplined and, you know, controlling their pass rush lanes.
I have tried. It's easy for me to sit here just as an observer of the team to say, hey, I'll believe L'Jarius Sneed helps this team when I see it. But internally, it would also be sensible for them to say, look, we have to move forward as if he's not going to give us much, but how optimistic do you think they are that they can get something from him at some point this year?
Well, I mean, you let them tell it. He's going to be their guy, right? You saw Denard Wilson say, like, he's the starter, period.
Right.
Done. You know what I mean? And, look, they know the work that he's put in. They know where he is as far as coming back from the injury. So I'm going to leave that to their judgment. I personally would still have questions just because of how things worked last year. And then knowing the past, you know, how extensive of a Kawhi Leonard, like management, load management type of program he's needed to be on, you're going to have those questions. So I would definitely keep an eye on that situation and wonder, okay, are we going to get to a point where this shows up again?
How many waiver pickups would you anticipate they make once all of the things shake out tomorrow? Is it two? Is it four? What do you think?
It depends on who becomes available, but I could see them picking up a corner. I could see, you know, a D tackle. Always an opportunity. You can never have too many linemen. So, yeah, I think they'll make two, three moves. And, you know, I've said it over and over again. If I'm man 49 to 53, yeah, I'm going to feel good on Tuesday, but I'm going to feel better on Thursday. You know what I mean?
To follow up on that, Teron, are there any players who were released around the NFL today who intrigue you as a potential fit here?
I think that McKelvin, I forget his last name, but he's from A&M, I think it was. I liked him coming out the D-tackle, so that's an option that I could see them picking up and adding to the depth there. I only got him keeping four, but, I mean, you could add him, and that would be a fifth guy. I wouldn't put him over James Lynch, but he'll be another rotational one. So you got him. Obviously, you could always look at some of the you know, special team type of guys. I off the top of my head, there aren't too many that I could just say, hey, look at this dude. But McKelvin Telvin, I think his last name, he is somebody.
Now, quickly, let's go back to the running backs, TD. Julius Chestnut. I think he did enough this preseason to push for, now that Tajay is going to be out, that he's the number two back. And if that is the case, do you think, even if Spears is put on short-term IR and he missed, do you think they really go out and get another back if they have Chestnut? Because he's proven that not only can he run, he can catch the ball out the backfield.
Yeah, he's shown that he can catch the ball out of the backfield. Not the same matchup problem that Spears was. Mm-hmm. I would say they pick up a running back if it's one of those guys that, you know, comes out of the backfield, motion into receiver spot, and can run routes like a receiver. Mm-hmm. That's always going to be an opportunity. And if he could double as a return guy, I think that's something. But, I mean, and there's always a lot of those guys out there, so we'll see.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, joining us here on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, and he's presented every week by Bart Durham Injury Law. Teron, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll talk next week.
I appreciate you guys. Take it easy. Go Mets.
Let's get it together, guys. Get it together, boys. Gosh.
We'll see today.
Today's a new day, TD. Today's a new day.
That's right.
Y'all starting to sound like Cowboy fans.
This is more than just a little dip they're in right now.
We've waited longer, 8 years longer since we've seen a World Series, man. You know.
All right, TD. Good luck. Good luck to the Mets.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
All right.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your reaction on the Tennessee Titans. But coming up next, the Vanderbilt Commodores open their season Saturday at home versus Charleston Southern, a 6 o'clock kickoff at First Bank Stadium. We start our weekly conversations with Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. We will be joined in a few moments by Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. The Commodores open the season Saturday at home versus Charleston Southern. That is a 6 o'clock p.m. kickoff at First Bank Stadium. 6 a.m. kickoff would be interesting. It is a 6 p.m. kickoff at First Bank Stadium. So we will be joined by Clark Lee in just a matter of moments. But as we wait for Clark Lee, let's read this text from Jeff on our text line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai Hyundai.com, I should say, about Cam Ward. Jeff writes, quote, "How many regular season games do you think it will take for us to have a fairly good idea as to whether we got Cam Ward or Scam Ward with the first overall pick?" I see what you did there, Jeff.
The whole season. That's what it's going to take. And then next season, we'll know. You know, they didn't know after four games whether Will Levis, well, they thought it was. You know, a few games into his rookie season, toward the end there, they thought they had their guy. And then he came back the next following season, and that's when they found out he wasn't the guy. So it's not going to be one or two, three, four. It's just a season. That's how they're looking at it. I'm just telling you how they're looking at it. They're looking at it, not a one game sample, not a five game sample. They're looking for a season. And then into next season, because we've all seen quarterbacks, they start off hot and then they fizzle out. Or they start off in the struggle and then they figure it out. And so if you know by four games, that'd be great. I mean, I'm sure Washington knew early that they had their quarterback. I'm sure Houston knew early they had their quarterback. I think that second season is sort of like that okay, we know he's the guy now. It's putting a marker on it, that next following season. So you're not going to know in four games. I hope we do, but I don't think we will.
I would say I want to see, and it might happen in the very first game, mm-hmm. I don't know. I want to see how he responds to the adversity that will inevitably hit. So it's going to hit. And there'll be a lot of people like that texter saying, "Is it Scam Ward?" You know, like that you know, he's got to deal with that noise because that's part of the job. And I don't care what city you're in or where you were drafted, but when you're the starting quarterback, you get put through the ringer. So I want to see how he handles that. I think he'll get through it, but I think that will be the first thing I'm looking for. As far as the number of games, I agree with D-Mace. You got to get this is all this year is all about him and going through the ups and downs, getting through it, supporting him as much as you can, and it's not necessarily all about the results. You got to have some results. You need to have some moments where you're like, "Yes,
yeah,
that's what we're looking for. More of that." And mixed in with the, whoa, we got to learn from that. But that's why I'm not worried about all of the results, completion percentage, all this stuff. I want to see how he gets through the tough times.
We do have some major breaking NFL news, courtesy of Adam Schefter, as we await Clark Lee. Another Holden ends. The Bengals and Trey Hendrickson have reached an agreement today on a $14 million raise for this year, boosting his 2025 salary to $30 million per sources. Hendrickson still is scheduled to become an unrestricted free agent after this season. Trey Hendrickson had insisted that he wouldn't play this season for the $16 million remaining on his contract. Now he has a reworked contract and is expected to play in the Bengals opener against the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, the Bengals saw how many damn points they gave up the other day. And they were like, nope, we need him back. We ain't a good defense with them, but we damn sure ain't one without them. So they had to get him back and sign. So good for them. I don't know what it does for Cincinnati because he got 17 sacks last season and 17 sacks the season before that, and Cincinnati failed to make it to the playoffs. Or they got ousted in the first round, I think, the year prior.
I was every analysis we heard while this was going on with Hendrickson, and of course Terry McLaurin also has signed. That was big news that came down either this morning or yesterday. You knew it was probably going to get there. Micah Parsons is the last big one. Of course, he was the picture of him sleeping on the training table. I mean, he knew exactly what he was doing.
Oh, my goodness.
He's like, yo, Jerry likes drama. He wants to go on the podcast and say, your agent told me to stick it up my bleep.
Uh-huh.
Well, I can play that game, too. You know, but there was no formula where the Bengals could get better by trading Hendrickson. No. They needed him, so this was going to get done.
So Trey Hendrickson back in the fold for the Cincinnati Bengals. As I said before, the Vanderbilt Commodores open the regular season Saturday at home against Charleston Southern. That is a 6 p.m. kickoff at First Bank Stadium. And in just a matter of mere seconds, we will be joined by Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. We will talk to Clark every Monday at 4:30. So looking forward to those conversations. Just waiting for David to patch him through, and then we will chat with Clark Lee. But I have a question for him about the Any Given Saturday docuseries on Netflix. I've watched it now, and I know that Vanderbilt was prominently featured in this. So I am curious to hear what he has to say to this question, because I know that I don't like to watch myself after I've been filmed. I'm curious what Clark is going to say. But we welcome in Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee to the program. Clark, we are glad to have you every week on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well. Thank you so much. So let's start with some major news from last week in the SEC. The conference announced that its teams will play a 9-game conference schedule starting next season, as well as requiring each team to schedule at least one additional high-quality non-conference opponent from the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, or Notre Dame. Now, your schedule is already among the toughest in the country, and it's about to get tougher. So what was your reaction to hearing that news from the SEC?
Well, I mean, I think in some ways we've been, you know, I don't know what the right expression is, kicking this can around for a couple of years now. I just kind of anticipated eventually it would get to this. Obviously, 9 games plus the additional quality opponent. I mean, that is as, you know, as challenging as it comes. But I think that's, you know, when you're in this league, you expect that kind of stuff. And I don't look. I've always said. I mean, they'll determine, you know, how many conference games, who we play, put them on the schedule and line them up and let's play the games. I'm just not going to put that much energy into it. We got to focus on continuing to build this program. We got to focus on we have this season, and we'll deal with next season as it comes.
Clark, of course, the Netflix docuseries Any Given Saturday was a big hit. We've all watched it and enjoyed it. And as it was being filmed, I imagine you really didn't notice the cameras as you were coaching and addressing your players. But when you had an opportunity to watch it, how did you feel you and your program were portrayed? And on a lighter note, were there any moments captured in the series that made you say, is this how I really am?
I think I said it. We watched our portion of it as a team. So just the portion that Vanderbilt was featured in. I thought it was important that we got our eyes on it at the same time. You know, as first of all, Netflix does an unbelievable job box to box. I thought all class professionals. I mean, those guys are the best of the best. And yet this is reality TV, and there are going to be heroes made. There are going to be narratives that are kind of pulled to the forefront that may not actually represent, you know, exactly how it transpired or exactly what the pulse of the program is. And so to see it all the same and to watch it together was important to me. When we finished watching it, my first question, God, is that how I really sound? You know, that's what I asked the team. They all laughed. We, at the end of the day, it was authentic. I thought my biggest point of concern in it all was I'm not going to change. I'm not going to go on a script. I'm not going to alter the way I communicate with my team. If anything, it was an opportunity for people to see how we operate behind the scenes and to get a feel for what it is like to be a part of this program. I felt like that came through, and yet there's no way in the world that they could accurately portray what last season was and really, you know, there are so many great stories within last season that really go unaddressed, and that's not Netflix's fault. That's just the nature of the beast. I mean, they're following a bunch of different teams, and there are a bunch of different things going on. But you know, we have to be okay with it not being 100% exactly how it all happened. And yet, I thought they captured authentically what our program's like internally, and hopefully, football fans enjoyed getting a glimpse of that.
We'll talk with Vanderbilt's head football coach, Clark Lee. And Clark, I enjoyed it a lot. We talked about it the next day. We all saw it. So I really do enjoy it. I really did enjoy it. And you know how they featured you and your program. It was top notch. But you returned a lot of your production from last season to this season. Are your concerns the same this season heading into your first game as they were last season?
Well, I think in the first game, you're always concerned about just being crisp and clean and executing and those kinds of things. I mean, obviously we do the best we can to work through scrimmages and try to iron out all the potential details that need to be covered. And yet the ball's going to be put down and we're going to make mistakes, and we want hope to limit those mistakes. Every year is different, and so you know the boat we built last year for Team 4 is necessarily different than the one that we're building out for this team. Paying attention to the fact that we do return a lot of players, we do have a lot of veteran leadership on this team, that doesn't guarantee us anything. And so staying young and hungry on one side, but also really focusing on how we can stay healthy and try to sustain performance through what is going to be a really challenging season. You know, the interesting thing to me is you know, we are still such an underdog, and we're still such a program that's just counted out, and we have to earn so much of the respect if we're going to get it. And yet, you know, with the Netflix documentary and all the things that are going on, we are getting more of the spotlight, and there's more being talked about in terms of this program publicly, a part of the public narrative. And, you know, I just got to continuously recenter this program, recenter this team on the fact that, you know, we have so much out in front of us to prove. And last year, all of those things were kind of second nature. We were coming off a 2-10 season, and you know, no one really had any, we weren't a part of any conversation. I think this year we have to be really disciplined in the way we approach our work, the way we invest, understanding the goals we have and how hard it's going to be. All that stuff kind of sets the course for how we operate internally. And again, you know, the boat is different this season because it needs to be, and yet the fundamentals of who we are and how we're going to win and the things that we need to do to find success this year won't change.
Clark Lee is with us, Vanderbilt head football coach. And coach, what one thing that we've noticed and learned in this short time that NIL and transfers have existed is it's not about maybe what maybe you initially envisioned in the SEC was grabbing the second string quarterback off of another team in your league or a Big Ten team. A lot of times it's finding those other guys that have been sort of lost in the shuffle who have developed. And I'm thinking of that when I ask you about Trey Richardson, who's coming over from Division II. I'm hearing really good things about him. You've had some success with players who maybe come from the same kind of developmental path. So what are you seeing from him?
Well, he has speed, and he comes from Wichita, Kansas. We have a pretty strong Kansas with Tim Beck and Jerry Kill and those guys. And so a lot of it has to do with, as you say, some of these kind of under the radar players that there's someone that we trust who's worked with them or had eyes on them or knows a little bit more about their story, can kind of explain away some of the complexity of it and say, hey, this guy's a really good player, a really good kid. And all those things are Trey Richardson. I mean, he's had a wayward path. He's earned the right to be here. He's changed the speed dynamic on our field. I mean, this guy really has the ability to run away from you. That's obviously going to make us better on defense too, as we compete against him. But that is kind of a common refrain in how we operate is we're not afraid of, again, the under the radar player or the chip on the shoulder player. We just want to gather as much information as we can that tell us that this predicts to someone who can impact winning. And when we have connections with coaches or people that have trained an athlete or again, been around them for an extensive exposure, and we're getting the positive feedback from those places, we tend to trust those relationships and trust our eyes in evaluation, and hopefully this one pays off. I mean, Trey's been such a great addition to this point. We've been really impressed with him through practice, and now it's about taking all that preparation and applying it in competition.
I know one thing I'm sure you've gone back and looked at. One of the strengths of your team last year was really grinding teams, ball control, lower the possessions, and win with doing the little things with special teams and things like that. But at the same time, I know you want to grow with you know, taking your shots and getting more explosive plays. How's that process going for you?
Well, that's exactly right. We don't want to lose our identity. We still want to run the ball to win and to be able to grind out possession and score touchdowns in the red zone. That's our formula. And yet, you know, what we did a year ago, played out over the course of multiple years may not be sustainable. I mean, we were number one in the country with respect to giveaways. And, we had a really effective offense when it came to conversion down and red zone conversion. So what are ways that we can protect against those statistics tipping against us this year? We got to be better at taking the ball away, so creating more possessions for our offense. We still want to have, you know, the same turnover margin, but we're going to accomplish that by giving our offense a little room for error and being a little more aggressive on the ball defensively. And then, you know, we need to get in the end zone faster in possession. So still want to be great on possession down. We still want to have this methodical approach, but, you know, when opportunities present for us to get the ball up and over the top of the defense, we need to execute. And there are kind of two elements to that. Obviously, there's the execution of the play, the throw, the catch, you know, and syncing up that way. But also, a lot of these shot plays come down to pass protection. And, you know, this is a place that we approved upon a year ago. You know, we have a quarterback who has, in his kind of nature, the ability to extend plays and to find windows in pass rush. But there are times where we need him to be able to stand tall in the pocket and get the ball down the field. And so that's been a focus. It starts with the run game, because everything's going to start with the run game. If you can get your run game going, you can get teams to load the box up. You can get defenses to take risks to try to stop the run. And once they take those risks, we have a chance then to get the ball up over and the top. In those moments, we need to be able to protect it and then obviously sync up with the quarterback and the receiver. But I've seen that in our offense. You know, I mean, again, we'll have to take preparation to performance, but I've been pleased with how that's looked to this point in our training.
We had a chance to talk to Martell Hite during the SEC media days, and I know you guys carefully. You even talked to Deion Sanders about managing. You know, as obviously Deion did it, and then of course he had Travis Hunter. We've debated on how Travis Hunter's rookie year is going to go, trying to do what he did in college in the NFL. But so how has the process been for you with Martell, trying to figure out what he can handle on both sides of the ball?
You know, we met on this today, actually, just trying to project what Saturday is going to look like and feel like for him. And this being our first time really doing it, you know, it'll be interesting kind of to get a feel for how it works for him, you know, keeping him as fresh as we can while also using him in situations where we're going to need him, both sides of the ball, obviously as a returner as well. You know, we lost Martell to a concussion for an extended period of time there in the middle of training camp. So we didn't actually get to do as much in preparation as we would have liked. We've gotten him back here over the last, you know, week. And he's looked great, and so we've worked him back up to where his player load and what he's trained for is going to allow us to use him in all three phases. We'll do that, but I would anticipate you know, us kind of being mindful of not overexposing him in game one, just because again he didn't get the full training camp, and we're still learning how this is going to impact him and how he will respond to a situation where he may play a defensive series, catch the punt as a punt returner, and then turn around and be on the field as an offensive player too. You know, what can he handle physically? How quickly can he recover series to series? You know, obviously this will be our first time through it. We want to lean on the side of protecting him, knowing that we're going to need him in all three phases as the year goes on.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Clark, thank you so much for your time today. Good luck Saturday against Charleston Southern.
Always fun to be with you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Clark. Clark Lee on the program. The Commodores open the season Saturday at home, a 6 p.m. kickoff at First Bank Stadium against Charleston Southern. 615-737-1025. There are more than 10 days until the Titans open against the Denver Broncos, but we have 10 shows until the Titans open against the Denver Broncos. So how appropriate that we start a annual tradition here on this program. Willie is going to bust out the scrolls. It's time for question one of Willie Donick's 10 Titans questions. We will get to that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Titans at Broncos. 2 weeks from yesterday. But we have 10 shows left until that week one matchup. Willie Donick happens to have 10 pressing Titans questions. So each show, over the next 2 weeks, Willie will introduce one of these questions. He has the scrolls. He will jot these things down. We will revisit them. We will laugh at each other. We will laugh at ourselves. And we want you to participate as well. So Willie will introduce question one, and then you can answer it as well at 615-737-1025. So Willie Donick, bust out those scrolls, my friend. Question number one in your annual Titans 10 questions.
Hold on. The scrolls are as old as the dead, time, right?
They are.
The scrolls are as old as time.
I'm sad to announce that I forgot to bring my scrolls, the actual scrolls.
I'm surprised you can even carry it around.
I'm going to have to transcribe what we talk about today to the actual scrolls, which are sitting by my bed right now.
I'm surprised you can even carry the scrolls around. They've been around forever. Or
yes.
Is it like...
It must be very well preserved, and that's why it's been sitting in a very safe, secure spot.
Or is it like Harry Potter where they just make the book small? You can throw it in your pocket.
So let's do one that we've had a lot of fun with the last couple years, and I felt like it's become a tradition. Let's just see how it goes this year. So last year we asked, can the Titans be league average when it comes to sacks allowed? Mm-hmm. Can this offensive line that has two first-round picks, one of which has been shifted over to a comfortable spot, the new addition of Dan Moore, who is overpaid but should be, in theory, quite a bit of an upgrade for what has happened, those two tackle spots. Can this team, now with the investing that they've done, with the free agency money that's sizable on the three other guys, plus the two first-round picks, can it translate in sacks? Now you have the Cam Ward factor, rookie quarterback, but last year... they allowed 52 sacks, 2024, sixth most in the league, and the only reason it was 52 was because they benched Will Levis and went to Mason Rudolph, who was actually really good at not getting sacked, right? He started quite a few games. If Levis had started all the games or not gotten hurt, they might have been up there. The Bears, for example, gave up 68 sacks. You don't see that when you see Caleb Williams' numbers, right? The numbers look okay. Hey, 20 touchdown passes, 6 interceptions. But the 68 sacks was a big downgrade on his overall picture. The year before, when it was Ryan Tannehill and Will Levis, the Titans gave up 64 sacks. Now, the Giants 2 years ago gave up 85. 85 sacks. Are you kidding me?
That's a lot of sacks.
Now, that makes the Titans offensive line look a little bit better.
80. Wow.
So, league average most years is about 40. So, let's do this. Can the Titans allow, as a team, over or under? Can they? What's the over under? Will you take over or under 42.5 sacks? Let's just give a little leeway. Let's put a little bit up there. League average. You got this investment in the offensive line. You got a different quarterback, second year of the offense, over or under 42.5 sacks for the Titans.
And you said
allowed.
And you said how many last season?
Last year.
58, wasn't it?
They allowed 52.
Okay.
52. And the year before that, they allowed 64.
So we're asking if the Titans can shave roughly 10 sacks
from
off
last
their
year.
Total
from
last
year.
Season.
But remember, they don't have Mason Rudolph, who started, six games?
I've tried to black out all of last season.
Yes, I'm sure you have.
But here is a stat from last season. There were 47 quarterbacks in the NFL last season who took a minimum of 100 dropbacks. Will Levis... number one, and in this case, that's not good. Number one in the percentage of pressures that turned into sacks, 30.4%.
Yes.
Let me repeat that. 30.4% for Will Levis. By comparison, Mason Rudolph in the same category, playing behind the same offensive line, 12.4%.
Much more what you're looking for, yes.
Cam Ward, last season at Miami, had a pressure-to-sack ratio of 15.9%. So about half of what Will Levis did in the NFL last season. So despite all of that, because there is a rookie quarterback under center, I will still take the over. I don't think the Titans are going to shave off 10 sacks. I could see 7 or 8, but I will keep it at slightly over 42.5.
All right, D-Mace, what do you got?
The last 2 years, they've given up 116 sacks total, so that's about 58 over the last two seasons. So the real number should have been 52. That's what the real number should have been. As far as, like, the last 2 years, on average, what they've given up.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I'm going to have to put it at the over. But not quite, like, I don't think it's going to be, because you're picking, what, 42?
42.5, which was, you know.
I think they're still going to be.
A little above what the league averages most years,
I think they'll be right at 50. 40. I think they'll be right at 50, giving up 50 sacks.
So we're both taking the over.
Yes.
Willie?
You know, the plan to preserve Cam Ward, this is why we asked these questions.
Who took the least amount of sacks?
The least amount of sacks last year?
Yeah.
Last year, I pulled up 2 years ago. Last year, the least amount of sacks allowed was, hold on. Why is this thing blocking the last? Well, let's see. The Falcons were 25th in the league and allowed 32.
Okay.
So there were some teams that allowed less than 32.
Oh wow!
Sacks.
Goodness, that quarterback must have felt good in the pocket.
And you know what, Willie? I'm going to give you an advantage because you are the one who is writing these questions. You'll have the break to think about it before you give your answer. 615-737.
And I will answer D-Maze's question too. I'll find out who gave up the fewest last year.
615-737-1025. Willie, repeat your question for the listener so that they can participate as well.
The Titans have allowed 52 sacks as a team last year and 64 2 years ago. Can they shave down the number of sacks with the investment in the offensive line and a new quarterback, not named Will Levis? Over or under 42.5 sacks allowed by the Titans offensive line this year. What do you think? 615-737-1025.
Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.